Information is free.
The law.
There is hope.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge.
Tonight we care.
Appear to border
and it
on
shows.
The law.
The country.
You will remember nothing you have seen or heard here.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not cooperate, it made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
A government of whom they were innocent.
They have no idea what they're up against.
If the American people ever allow private banks to control the issue of their money, first by inflation, then by deflation, the banks and corporations that will grow up around them will deprive the people of their property until their children will wake up homeless on the continent their fathers conquered. And that's a happy 4th of July weekend, my friends. It's the 130th episode of MediaMonarchy.com. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster. For all the news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups, we got 4th of July fireworks, fear in the final phase, the cyberspace war, NASA's lost tapes, and more moon memes. Obama-sized Afghan surge, detention in Depop, MyWars lab leaks, rope not dope, EnviroHealth, Econo crash in the Wall Street Project, bankster's heart cap and trade, and the coming climate tyranny. It's all here. It's July 3rd, 2009. It's the 130th episode of MediaMonarchy.com.
There's a road that meets the road that goes to my house, and how it green grows there. And we got special boots that beat the path to my house, and it's careful when I'm there. And I say your uncle was a crooked French Canadian, and he was gut shot running gin. And how his guts were all suspended in his fingers, and how he held them, how he held them, held them in. Down the drain, the water rolls down the drain. Oh, a lovely day, in a lovely day. July, 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 it never seems so strange. July, 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 it never seems so. It never seems so strange. This is the story of the road that goes to my house, and what goes there do remain. And all the troughs that run the length and breadth of my house, and the chickens, how they rattle chicken chains. We'll remember this when we are old and ancient, though the specifics might be vague. And I'll say your camisole was a sprightly light vagina, when in fact it was a nappy bluish gray. And the water rolls down the drain, the blood rolls down the drain. July, it never seems so strange. July, 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 it never seems so. It never seems so strange. It never seems so strange. It never seems so strange. It never seems so strange.
July, July, never seemed so strange. the second best import, or export rather, from Portland, Oregon. That's the Decemberists going back a few records to their album Castaways and Cutouts, or Cutouts and Castaways. July. And it's a hot one already. The new studios for Portland Radio Authority are going to be hot this summer. It's already hot. And we got a lot of hot, sticky, disgusting news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups to go over on this 130th episode of MediaMonarchy.com. That's a lot of shows. That's a lot of mind-blowing news. And if we didn't add some sugar from The Onion or The Decemberists or cool music and good clips and to basically sometimes laugh at what's going on, we would lose our minds doing this. It's the big 4th of July weekend and all that that entails. But it's just after 10 a.m. Pacific time, July 3rd, 2009, and I come to you from the home studios of the Portland Radio Authority in Southeast Portland, Oregon, praradio.org, every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific Time. Simulcast live, thanks to 92.3 and zeropointradio.com, 11 a.m. Mountain Time, and the worldwide home of free speech, revereradio.net, 1 p.m. Eastern Time. Again, thanks to 98.5 Free Radio Olympia, rebroadcasting the shows Saturday mornings at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, frolympia.org, 93.9 boulderfreeradio.com, KBFR, and thanks to Glenn at cascadiapublicradio.com, James Corbett of the Corbett Report, Clyde Lewis in the Ground Zero Lounge, Alex Ansari of Outside the Box, and all of you who help spread the word about what we're trying to get out. You know how to get a hold of me any number of ways. FaceSpace, TwitterTube, Yoohoo, Gmail, Skype, Instant Messenger, iTunes, RadioForAll.net, and Archive.org, all using Media Monarchy as the username or keyword. Let's glance at Google News, see what's snapping on this July 3rd, 2009. We, of course, know that British troops are helping expand the major Afghani surge. Obama had his first coup recently in Honduras. Fisher Price's My First Coup. We also now, of course, have Obama launching his big Afghani surge. As we noted on the previous episode, B-side 129, that one, they've gone on record to saying they're going to just stop trying to eradicate the opium coming out of Afghanistan. The other thing that we note is that they're heading into the very territory that is the largest production area of opium in the world. Iran to try UK embassy staff accused of incitement. Of course, all the garbage and big pharma celeb industrial complex swirling around Neverland, Nevermore. And we've also got the crazy rabbit lady in Oregon going back to jail. But we ain't got time for that. Our first posting, massive, brutal, police state international, the final phase, fear, flyovers, and the 4th of July. We're going to kick it off with a very important message and piece from Paul Joseph Watson. Red alert, the total takeover of America enters its final phase. The wholesale looting of America and the transfer of wealth and power over to a banking elite who are setting up a world government, along with the complete obliteration of any remaining freedom to protest, resist, or even speak out against this agenda, is now entering its final phase as numerous different pieces of the jigsaw puzzle fall into place and portray a pretty clear picture of tyranny. We're about to sound the death knell for the United States if one, or rather, if every one of the following attacks on our liberty, free speech, sovereignty, and right not to be ruled over by an unelected banking dictatorship is not fiercely opposed or crushed. Red Alert 1, the passage of the climate bill, which we'll cover. Red Alert 2, the seemingly endless economic bailouts. Red Alert 3, federal hate crimes legislation. Red Alert 4, the Senate Bill 787, otherwise known as the Clean Water Restoration Act, dealing with the waters of the United States. Red Alert 5, the Second Amendment, the right to keep and bear arms. Red Alert 6, the right to protest against any of this, deems you a terrorist. That's six red alerts. So, the wrap-up, 1 minute to midnight. If we don't stand up in unison and exercise our right to protest and free speech now more than ever before, while pointing out that the real terrorists are those who would seek to destroy the freedoms enshrined in the Bill of Rights, then we may find ourselves doing our protesting behind barbed wires and concrete blocks of a camp. The hour is late. The clock stands at 1 minute to midnight, and the federal government, through all the examples documented above, is on the verge of implementing nothing less than a total environmental, financial, and societal dictatorship and killing what once was the United States of America. Almost identical programs of total enslavement are being pushed through in almost every other major Western country at the same time. If we don't stop obsessing about the minutiae of life and actually concentrate on the imminent destruction of the very principles of our livelihoods, the bedrock freedoms that allow us to operate in relative comfort on a daily basis and be reasonably secure in our own homes, being able to pay our own bills, put food on our own tables, earn money, air our grievances when government threatens to impinge on all those basic freedoms, then there'll be nothing left but a rotten, hollow carcass and a memory of what America once strived to be: land of the free, home of the brave, not land of the thief, home of the slave. That's a red alert from Paul Joseph Watson, and he's writing that from the UK. We're soaking in it, as of course they are as well. As he pointed out, it's not just here, it's everywhere. But let's run down the rest of this ugly list of police state international headlines. More on the border wars. Recent murders don't sway Napolitano on the DHS report. We've noted DHS and DOD going up against each other about who gets to run the border wars. But this, of course, is referring to, you know, the right-wing extremism, homegrown terrorism. Napolitano, she is, of course, the head of Homeland Stupidity now. She endorses the PASS ID bill, which we've noted several times now is replacing the REAL ID bill because that name's too dirty. We're going to change it. An interesting note from Federal Computer Week: verified identity shuts down registered traveler lanes. An interesting shutdown of lanes where, oh, but I'm a trusted traveler. H.R. 1966... That's a thought crime bill, and that's going to threaten talk radio. It's H.R. 1966, it's Senate Bill 909, and it's known as the Matthew Shepard Hate Crimes Prevention Act. All these things sound good on the surface, but it's what they're really intended to do, and the vagaries contained within that let them prosecute me for doing this, or you for doing that. A fleshing out of this comes from The Examiner. Talk show hosts may be accomplices under the new hate bill, but we have a clip from KTSM.com about 1,500 National Guard troops heading to the border.
This morning, the Obama administration is developing a plan to get troops on our border. At least 1,500 National Guard volunteers are wanted to help combat the violence created by the warring drug cartels in Mexico. Trevor Conner is live on 9 along the U.S.-Mexico border with the latest strategy in the war on drugs. Good morning, Trevor.
Good morning, Melanie.
Now, the move has many supporters, but some fear the move will militarize the border. What is the administration saying?
Well, Melanie, 1,500 National Guard troops will be used on the U.S.-Mexico border to support the existing counter-drug program. That includes here in Texas and over in New Mexico. Now, the plan is being worked out between the Defense Department and Homeland Security. The program will use guardsmen for surveillance, intelligence analysis, and aviation support. It also supplies ground troops who help at border crossings. Now, without President Obama's insistence, this plan wouldn't even happen. The Defense Department is worried the use of National Guard troops will be seen as militarizing the region, and Homeland Security Chief Janet Napolitano has been reluctant about the use of guardsmen on the border. Now, we talked to people in El Paso about this, and most think it's a great idea for several different reasons.
I don't think it would hurt. I think it would probably be a good idea and supportive. I think I used to frequent going over to Mexico to have dinner on a regular basis, and now you couldn't pay me enough money to go over there at all.
What do you think the National Guard troops will help?
I think it might be a comfort to know that they're here.
Good idea, because of 9/11, we have to protect our borders. And that's when terrorists are going to come through. They're going to come through Mexico. That's the biggest problem that they're facing. It's not only with the drug lords coming through, but with the terrorists coming through that same corridor.
I don't think violence is here yet. And people in Mexico are pretty scared to bring it across.
Other El Pasoans we spoke with say they worry the National Guard troops will be put in harm's way and become targets for drug cartels on the border. Now, details on Guard deployment are still being worked out. We're told the program will only last a year, and it will be federally funded. Reporting live on the U.S.-Mexico border, Trevor Connor, News Channel 9, today.
And we got to do it because of the 9/11. I mentioned it before. Here it is again. This from the Washington Post. Pentagon and DHS divided on military's role at the border. We've also got the New York Times hyping border violence by a new rogue militia. Employer online monitoring meets resistance. That's from the Washington Times, and whether it relates explicitly to or just references, it still reminds us of the story we covered last week about the city trying to get everyone's passwords to Facebook and whatever when you want a city job. Oh, and here it is again, this time from Alternet, spies in the classroom. The government is running a secretive intel recruitment program in schools. We went over that. Obama loves it. It's all going to be part of the Stasi state and the civilian national security force. NYPD to get another $10 million to help protect the city from dirty bombs. That's from the New York Daily News. FEMA and Israeli Defense Force heads meet to discuss quote-unquote emergency management issues. We know coming up very soon, FEMA drills, National Level Exercise 2009, NLE-09, coming up at the end of July. It's FEMA and Northrop Grumman and all the other usual suspects. And they're basically practicing to take over your city. So, of course, if you're going to practice that, you better go to the folks who know how to do it best. You want to learn how to take over land that isn't yours, you go to the Israeli Defense Forces. Another FEMA note, unfinished business at FEMA, a national preparedness perspective. That's from the Heritage Foundation, heritage.org, a nice long white paper by white people. ID cards for India. 1 billion citizens will go into the second largest citizens database. That's from the Daily Mail. 2 ATF arrests awaken theories of conspiracy. That's from the Washington Times. The Harrisburg, PA chapter of the NAACP urges martial law. Because the crime's so bad, we just need to call out and please protect us. Please invite the vampire into your house. That's what Michael Shoyer said about America's only hope being Bin Laden detonating a device so that the people will beg to be protected. Controversial Jenna 6 case ends with a deal. That's from the Washington Times. The setup story for what happens after this, the cover charge at this club, an RFID implant. So by way of InfoWars, they're hyping chips and RFID identification over on Tech Yahoo. And we've covered this before. This is nothing new. People have been implanting chips for a long time. It's going to be the cool thing. And even, did you see Idiocracy? Why come you ain't got no chip? But then, two MTV stars, Heidi Montag and Spencer Pratt, appeared on the Alex Jones Show, where they said that over their dead bodies would they ever take a microchip. That whole interview is posted up, busted up into parts on YouTube, and of course all the Hollywood gossip sites wasted no time in smearing Montag and Pratt and Jones. Because getting a microchip is going to be cool. Your parents, man, they're squares. They don't get it. Homeland Security and U.S. Army plan invasion of the states. Jim Corey of News with Views asking that question, and I think we know the answer. Black Hawk helicopters buzzed downtown L.A. in a military exercise last week. That's from the Los Angeles Times. There's going to be an attack helicopter flyover on the 4th of July. Where first we'll note that just before Memorial Day this year, Marines invaded Staten Island's Clove Lakes Park in what was billed as a simulated raid as part of Fleet Week festivities. The demo had absolutely no military training objective other than to get New Yorkers accustomed to seeing armed soldiers landing in public parks. Now the folks in California, as if the folks in California don't have enough to worry about over the 4th of July weekend, you know, what with their whole economy collapsing. Now, folks in California will get a similar demonstration. Four Super Cobra AH-1W attack helicopters are set to perform a 4th of July flyover for people gathered to watch evening fireworks at Orange County beaches. This coming from the Orange County Register, ocregister.com. We've also noted that the military was at the Kentucky Derby. We also noted that the military was at the Boston Marathon. Again, acclimating you to seeing uniformed military stormtroopers on your streets. We're also in California going to have some 4th of July checkpoints in California. I guess maybe fortunately for them, they won't even have any money to put in the cars. They may not have, if they have cars, they won't be able to afford the gas. So maybe they'll be able to avoid these 4th of July checkpoints in California, where Kurt Nimmo notes that John Adams is probably rolling in his grave. Because today, July 3rd, 1776, later changed to the 4th, noted that this should all be commemorated as the Day of Deliverance. By solemn acts of devotion to God Almighty, it ought to be solemnized with pomp and parade, with shows, games, sports, guns, bells, bonfires, and illuminations from one end of this continent to the other, from this time forward, forevermore. If we flash forward more than 200 years after Adams wrote this, it ain't going that way. Pasadena Star News covers the 4th of July checkpoints. And discussions about John Adams' illuminations will have to wait for another time. So that's Police State International Final Phase Fear of Flyovers and the 4th of July. We're going to get into some history mystery notes, Cronkite, Coke, Carnaby, and claims. But even the history mystery, what happened then, relates to right now and tomorrow and next week. We've noted all the latest big celebrity deaths. Carl Malden, Billy Mays, Michael Jackson, Farrah Fawcett, Ed McMahon. We noted, I believe, last week that rumors of Walter Cronkite's demise were greatly exaggerated. However, he's not doing well, and he's not expected to recover, his family says, that by way of raw story. So, the imminent passing of Walter Cronkite is upon us, and we're going to hit up Lauren Coleman of The Copycat Effect. Walter Cronkite was there. Walter Cronkite covered many mysteries and disasters during his lifetime. His Dutch family's surname was originally Cronkite, K-R-A-N-K-H-E-Y-T, which intriguingly means illness. Growing up, Walter Cronkite was a member of the Houston chapter of Demolay, a Masonic fraternal organization for boys. Cronkite was one of eight journalists selected by the U.S. Army Air Forces to fly bombing raids over Germany in a B-17 Flying Fortress. He also landed in a glider with 101st Airborne in Operation Market Garden and covered the Battle of the Bulge. After the war, he covered the Nuremberg trials and served as the United Press main reporter in Moscow for 2 years. Some of the historic events that were entwined with Cronkite's CBS Evening News broadcast life from 1962 to 1981 include the Dallas-based JFK assassination in 1963, the Dexter, Michigan UFO series of 1966, the Memphis-based MLK assassination in 1968, and the lunar landing of 1969.
Stand by, Walter. Okay, you're on.
Weather good. Astronauts good. Tracking system.
I think that our conquest of space is one of the great stories of the 20th century.
Never has there been before, nor will there be, anything like this pioneering adventure.
What a moment. I am on the way to the moon.
The landing on the moon presented an interesting emotional challenge for me. I had just as much time to prepare for that landing as the space program did. I'd watched it from the beginning.
30 feet, 2.5 down.
Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
Oh, boy. And yet, when that vehicle landed on the moon, I was speechless.
What?
I really couldn't say a thing.
And when Walter rejoiced over man landing on the moon, America rejoiced with him.
Neil Armstrong, 38-year-old American standing on the surface of the moon.
Here was something everyone could rally around. And I think Walter Cronkite's embrace of that program gave people American heroes at a time when they really needed them.
And boy, do we maybe need some heroes now that we're about to celebrate the 40th anniversary of the moon landing. I didn't have quite enough time to prepare and replay the clip of Walter Cronkite talking about being proud to sit on the right hand of Satan, along with Hillary Clinton. But if you just Google that, you can listen to it yourself, because we don't have time right now. But again, the moon memes, and of course the Mockingbird media. But we're going to get more into all of that in just a few minutes. A couple notes on Von Braun, the Holocaust Museum shooter, both by way of Alex Constantine, pointing out connections between Von Braun and a Ronald Reagan White House aide named Todd Blodgett. B-L-O-D-G-E-T-T. Todd Blodgett of the D.C. Callboy scandals. You remember that? The Washington Times running a story? VPs within Bush, Reagan, White House ensnared in prostitution ring. Sneaking boys into the White House late at night. It connects to Lincoln savings and loan scandal. Lawrence King. The boys of Omaha. All that. So those both go to Alex Constantine. Alternet, again, covering Coca-Cola's troubling history, drug addicts, Nazis, and MLK's condemnation. We've covered the dirty past of Coca-Cola many times. This Alternet article is actually an excerpt from a new book by Mark Thomas called Belching Out the Devil, Global Adventures with Coca-Cola. We also note that experts have recreated a Nazi stealth fighter to test out some technology. But someone resurrected a 1972 interview with a guy named Maurice Strong. Now, it looks like Maurice. I believe it may be pronounced Morris. Maurice Strong from 1972. The video's up on YouTube, but we've got some commentary and a little editorial notes by way of InfoWars with Al Gore and company, the cap-and-trade company, on the verge of making law of cap-and-trade policies. It's important to recognize the power propaganda that has paved the way for phony environmentalism and depopulation eugenics.
With all the evidence that we've amassed in our preparations for the Stockholm Conference, including the views of many of the world's leading scientists, I am convinced that the prophets of doom have got to be taken seriously. In other words, doomsday is a possibility. I'm equally convinced that doomsday is not inevitable.
Why do you think they have to be taken seriously?
Well, they have to be taken seriously because it has become apparent that today man's own activities have reached the scale where they are the principal determinant of his own future. For example, we are now, today, effecting more changes in the composition of the atmosphere, in the composition of the waters of the world, and even the composition of certain elements in our food chain. We're making more of these changes in one generation than have been made in millions of years of human evolution. We don't know exactly
what will be the ultimate impact of these changes, but we do know that many of them are irreversible, and many of them could be decisive in their effects on man's future. This question is not a matter of one man or one group of people predictions. It's a matter of the fact that an increasing number of very serious-minded scientists have produced evidence from a whole series of events, many of them the well-known pollution or environmental problems that have come to our attention, that the natural world in which man lives and on which he depends is indeed deteriorating, is being destroyed in many instances at a rate that is accelerating and that can only continue to accelerate unless we begin to control the activities that are having the destructive impact. Now, whether we are pessimistic or optimistic depends really on what we think about the nature of man. Whether we really believe that man, in light of this evidence, is going to be wise enough and enlightened enough to subject himself to this kind of discipline and control.
That's a 1972 interview from the BBC with Maurice Strong, a very, very highly connected but little-known player in the global elite scheme. James Corbett of the Corbett Report went over Maurice Strong into quite a bit of detail a few weeks ago on the Corbett Report. But here's a quick way to break through all this, and we're going to get more on the coming climate tyranny from James Corbett as well as all the other coverage. But if you just Google the first global revolution, the first global revolution, that's the name of a paper written by the Club of Rome, a secretive organization you're not supposed to care about. In their paper, The First Global Revolution, it reads in part, quote, "The common enemy of humanity is man. In searching for a new enemy to unite us, we came up with the idea that pollution, the threat of global warming, water shortages, famine, and the like would fit the bill. All these dangers are caused by human intervention, and it is only through changed attitudes and behavior that they can be overcome. The real enemy, then, is humanity itself." Breaking it down quite quickly, the gangsters and banksters and elites needed to figure out a way to maintain and build global total control, and the way to do that is to create fake enemies. They've done it before, they're doing it again. The coming climate tyranny, the green agenda. The green shirts coming soon to inspect your house and rat you out. You can't mix plastic with paper. You told us to recycle. Sorry, quoting The Simpsons. Switching gears, but still in the history mystery tip. This from KHOU.com. And this jumps back to April of this year, but a little more. Carnaby's widow sues, claims husband was a member of the CIA. In April 2008, Roland Carnaby, C-A-R-N-A-B-Y, led the Houston police on a 122-mile-per-hour chase that ended in the Galleria, all the while claiming to be a CIA agent. When he finally pulled over, police shot and killed him after he reached for something shiny. Carnaby's widow, Susan Carnaby, has filed a civil suit against the city in federal court, and in documents reviewed by KHOU 11 News, claims Carnaby was in fact working for the CIA. Quote, "The FBI and the CIA regularly fail to disclose the truth to the Houston Police Department," one court filing said. In another, Carnaby's attorney said he plans to call a former Secret Service agent to testify, quote, "with respect to Mr. Carnaby's work on behalf of the Secret Service and other federal agencies as a contract informant and operative." Randall Kalinin, Carnaby's attorney, says he definitely was a CIA agent. You can hit the flashback links back to April of this year. Cops kill CIA agent after car chase in Houston. Alex Constantine dives into the murder. Absolutely. Well-timed, well-executed. It solved many problems. The death of Paul Wellstone. The last bit on the history mystery note will flesh out something we hit in the B-side from the FBI vault, the complete Saddam interviews. This from Raw Story. The National Security Archive the better NSA, the National Security Archive has made public the complete set of formal and informal interviews carried out with the FBI and Saddam Hussein following his capture in Iraq in late 2003. Raw Story reported last week on the emergence of documents that showed the Bush administration's enhanced interrogation techniques were not needed to get Saddam to talk. Instead, the FBI chose to build a rapport with the ex-dictator, a strategy that resulted in Saddam eventually opening up to his interrogators. Now, the National Security Archive has released the FBI's records of 20 interviews and 4 informal discussions between agents and Saddam, which took place between February and June of 2004 in the detention cell at Baghdad International Airport, where Saddam was held. In the documents, quote, Saddam denied any connections to the zealot Osama bin Laden, cited North Korea as his most likely ally in a crunch, and shared President George W. Bush's hostility towards the fanatic Iranian mullahs. We link you to the National Security Archive page for their press release on the complete Saddam interviews, and you can hit down them all and pull down all those massive PDFs. So that's History Mystery, Cronkite, Koch, Carnaby, and Claims. And the note about Walter Cronkite and the moon anniversary just sets us up for what's about to land. Cyberspace war, lost tapes, underground labs, and more moon memes. First, from express.co.uk, NASA conveniently finds missing moon landing tapes a week before the anniversary. What are the freaking odds? Ecstatic space officials at NASA could be about to unveil one of their most stunning discoveries in 40 years. New and amazingly clear footage of the first moon landing. The release of these new images next month could be one of the most talked about events of the summer. The TV images the world has been used to seeing of the historic moment when Neil Armstrong descended down a ladder onto the moon's surface in 1969 is grainy, blurry, and dark. The following scenes in the clip embedded of the first moon landing in 1969, in which the astronauts move around the lunar lander, are so murky it's difficult to make out exactly what's going on, causing conspiracy theorists to claim the entire Apollo 11 mission was an elaborate fraud. However, viewers have only ever seen such poor quality footage because the original analog tapes containing the pictures beamed direct from the lunar surface were lost almost as soon as they were recorded. Instead, a poor quality copy made from a 16mm camera pointing at a heavily compressed image on a black and white TV screen has been the only record of the event. The Sunday Express can now reveal that the missing tapes containing the original high quality images have been found. If the visual data can be retrieved, NASA is set to reveal them to the world as a key plank of celebrations to mark the 40th anniversary of the landings. The tapes show in much more detail than almost anyone has previously seen the surface of the moon beneath the patriotic symbol of the U.S. flag. Crucially, they could, once and for all, dispel 40 years of wild conspiracy theories. On the opposite note, Buzz Aldrin has created a buzz opposing the new NASA moon plan. Now, whether or not that's about our plans to shoot a bunch of missiles and blow up the moon. Buzz Aldrin basically says, we've been there. What do we need to go back for? Which is kind of what the clip was that we played at the end of last week's show from Mr. Show about blowing up the moon. It was like, I went on there, I played some golf, ate a cracker. What else can you do with it? Digital Journal asking if there's a secret water table hidden on Mars. Is there life on Mars? But from the Associated Press, work has begun on one of the world's deepest underground labs. Oh, not one of. It'll be the deepest. Far below the Black Mountain Hills of Dakota, there lives a crew building the world's deepest underground science lab at a depth equivalent to more than 6 Empire State Buildings, a place uniquely suited to scientists' quest for mysterious particles known as dark matter. Scientists, politicians, and other officials gathered Monday for a groundbreaking of sorts at a lab 4,850 feet below the surface of an old gold mine that was once the site of Nobel Prize-winning physics research. The site is ideal for experiments because of its location. It's largely shielded from cosmic rays that could interfere with efforts to prove the existence of dark matter, which is thought to make up nearly a quarter of the mass of the universe. Interesting links for you to learn more about dark matter and this new gold mine science laboratory. But getting into the cyber world, first signs of internet censorship in Europe. That's being asked by Russia Today, but from The Guardian, UK Ministry of Defense blocks WikiLeaks.org. Big surprise. The Ministry of Defense is trying to block all internet access to the whistleblowing site WikiLeaks.org from thousands of its own computers after discovering that dissidents have been using it to leak copies of British military manuals, which we fed out to you last week when we covered the story. Newly obtained MOD emails reveal alarm over the discovery that WikiLeaks is freely publishing manuals that are used by patrols in Iraq. One email says, quote, "There are thousands of things on here. I literally mean thousands, not just UK MOD, but other places as well. Everything I clicked on to do with the MOD was restricted. It's huge." Dismay was sparked by the discovery that WikiLeaks had posted copies of a 2007 manual on UK tactics for Iraq and Afghanistan, link, and a handbook on ISTAR, Intelligent Surveillance Target Acquisition and Reconnaissance, on its website. Link, 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 PDF download. Mirrored sites, they can't squash it. The toothpaste is out of the tube, if you like. Russia and U.S. in dispute over computer attacks. That's from DefenseTalk.com. A czar you can believe in, or in reality, why neocons think we need the cybercom. That's from the National Review. But on the topic of the new coming cyber tyranny, we've got the climate tyranny coming. We already have our new financial world order being erected. They just need to steer us onto internet too. Oh yeah, they shut down our analog television, so we only have their digital television. So when they want to flip the switch to where every channel switches to the Pentagon channel, it's there for them. But from Danger Room, U.S. Cyber Command 404 error, mission not yet found. Defense Secretary and designated successor Robert Gates ordered the military to start setting up a new U.S. Cyber Command. It's a move that's been discussed in defense circles for more than a year, but despite the announcement, and despite the lengthy debate, no one in the military-industrial complex seems to know all for sure what this new fighting force is supposed to do exactly. Officially, the Pentagon still has a few months to figure things out. Gates told his troops in a Tuesday memo that they have until September 1st to come up with an implementation plan for the new command. But there's a ton to figure out in the next 10 weeks. As Gates notes, the plan will have to delineate U.S. Cybercom's missions, roles, responsibilities, detail the command's minimum requirements to get up and running, and sort out its relationships with the rest of the military and the rest of the government. In other words, they still have to do just about everything. Big surprise that the home of the National Security Agency, Fort Meade, has been picked up as the site for the new cybercom. Five stupid reasons there's no cyber czar yet, kind of a silly tongue-in-cheek article from govinfosecurity.com. Obama administration to involve the NSA in defending civilian agency networks. Hey, that's funny. I just mentioned the NSA and cybercom being in the same building. Well, but here's the Washington Post talking about it. The Obama administration will proceed with a Bush-era plan to use the National Security Agency assistance in screening government computer traffic on private sector networks, with AT&T as the likely test site, according to three current and former government officials. Thanks again, American Telegraph and Telephone, for helping the NSA spy on everyone. Do you think that's maybe why they have the exclusive contracts with the iPhone? Nah. The last note on this cyberspace war posting: the judge in the famed Megan Meir cyber bullying case, the judge has acquitted Lori Drew in the cyber bullying case and has overruled the jury. That is from Threat Level. But now we have a lot, and I made reference on the B-side of having a nice long conversation yesterday with my sister-in-law, who's about to give birth to a niece. I'm going to be an uncle for the second time. All my love and hope goes out to her. But she is an Obama mama with a hope baby, and she can't quite bring herself. Well, let's hold on. Let's wait. Hold on. Let's see let's see what they're going to do. Hold on. And that she basically hasn't had her old shit moment about what's going down. But let's get into it. Obama-Sia updates. Secrecy, transparency, detention, and depopulation. Our first of two clips. It might be too many, but again, it's some of that sugar I talked about to help the bad medicine go down. Jon Stewart hits on the Obama administration for their complete and total lack of transparency.
Now we're going to know everything from state secrets to Obama's once-a-day smoking habit. Yeah, that's right. Turns out he likes to get them all out of the way at once. The bottom line is we're going to get it all. It's a brand new day in Washington.
Sunshine. First thing I want to know, how much does the government eavesdrop on the people? Let me know.
His administration is invoking the state's secrets privilege, just as President Bush did, to shield eavesdropping programs from public exposure.
I did not see that coming. Well, I guess if you tell us about eavesdropping, it's no longer eavesdropping. Just being nosy. You never ring someone's doorbell and go, "Hi, I'm your peeping Tom." You know.
The president said today he is not going to allow the planned release of hundreds of Pentagon photos that show the mistreatment and abuse of prisoners by U.S. personnel.
All right, well, I can understand that. You know, maybe one of those situations where sunlight really isn't a disinfectant. Sunlight is more of an infectant. But other than that, you know, by the sunshine, right?
Some of the government websites that were set up to track stimulus are not up and running, speaking of transparency.
And there was also a recent development on the CIA interrogation tapes and an effort by this administration to keep all related documents secret.
The White House Office of Administration does not have to release records about possible emails, missing emails. Remember the story from the Bush White House? The White House now saying that they will not give access to the list of White House visitors, who comes and who goes. They don't believe that that is information the public needs to know.
You do know transparency means, right? They said that transparency. Yes, transparency. Why won't you let us know who's visiting you at the White House? What are you afraid we're going to... Who's visiting? Bono? Satan? Urkel? Who? Is there anything else that we can't see?
The Justice Department is trying to prevent the release of an interview Dick Cheney gave in 2004 as part of the investigation into the CIA leak case.
Why does the Obama administration want to protect former Vice President Dick Cheney from the likes of Jon Stewart?
What? So the... What? The entirety of the American people have been kept in the dark about the CIA leak case because of this ass...
The Daily Show hitting Obama for the lack of transparency. That's by way of a raw story and raw replay. And of course, it just further illustrates the more things change, the more one phony left-right president continues the agenda of the former phony left-right president. Like this story. White House drafts executive order to allow indefinite detentions. Again, from Raw Story, the Obama administration, fearing a battle with Congress that could stall plans to close Guantanamo, because they're already setting it all up over at Bagram, the Obama administration has drafted an executive order that would reassert presidential authority to incarcerate terrorism suspects indefinitely. This, according to three senior government officials with knowledge of White House deliberations. Such an order would embrace claims by former President George W. Bush that certain people can be detained without trial for long periods under the laws of war. Obama advisors are concerned that bypassing Congress could place the president on weaker footing before the courts and anger key supporters. Links in there, more from Glenn Greenwald over on Salon.com as well as thinkprogress.org. Big cheerleaders for the Obamasiah. Not so much Glenn Greenwald. He does great work. I don't think he's really been fooled by what's going down at all. But it's fun to watch the twisting and turning from the big mainline Think Progresses and the like. It's all moving forward. All these things that we talked about prior to the election are all happening. All the connections are there. We covered the latest bit of green propaganda from ABC a few weeks ago, Earth 2100. And then, of course, ABC turned over their broadcasting to the White House. But what bubbles under the surface of so much of what goes on is eugenics. The Obama depop policy exposed. Panelists in this clip we're about to hear from LPAC TV, this coming from LaRouche Pack, oh God, watch out. Panelists warn of the revival of eugenics under Obama's modern health care through the denial of care to millions who would be judged not fit to live. That sounds like Nazi Germany. Historian and compadre of Webster Tarpley, Anton Chaitkin, also alleges that Ezekiel Emanuel, brother of Rahm Emanuel, in working with Obama, has also called for the Hippocratic Oath to be, quote, junked.
We'll start with Mr. Chaitkin.
Anton Chaitkin, I'm a historian and the history editor for Executive Intelligence Review. President Obama has put in place a reform apparatus reviving the euthanasia of Hitler Germany in 1939 that began the genocide there. The apparatus here is to deny medical care to elderly, chronically ill, and poor people, and thus save, as the president says, $2 to $3 trillion by taking lives considered not worthy to be lived, as the Nazi doctors said. Dr. Ezekiel Emanuel and other avowed cost cutters on this panel also lead a propaganda movement for euthanasia headquartered at the Hastings Center, of which Dr. Emanuel is a fellow. They shape public opinion and the medical profession to accept a death culture such as the Washington state law passed in November to let physicians help kill patients whose medical care is now rapidly being withdrawn in the universal health disaster. Dr. Emanuel's movement for bioethics and euthanasia and this council's purpose directly continue the eugenics movement that organized Hitler's killing of patients and then other costly and supposedly unworthy people. Dr. Emanuel wrote last October 12th that a crisis, war, and financial collapse would get the frightened public to accept the program. Hitler told Dr. Brandt in 1935 that the euthanasia program would have to wait until the war began to get the public to go along. Dr. Emanuel wrote last year that the Hippocratic Oath should be junked. Doctors should no longer just serve the needs of the patient. Hoche and Binding, the German eugenicists, exactly said the same thing to start the killing. You on the council are drawing up the procedures, the list, to be used to deny care, which will kill millions if it goes ahead in the present world crash. You think, perhaps, the backing of powerful men, financiers, will shield you from accountability, but you are now in the spotlight. Disband this council and reverse the whole course of this Nazi revival now.
Thank you.
Anton Chaitkin exposing Ezekiel and Rahm Emanuel's eugenics ops. And you heard it again in there. You get the public frightened to where they not only go along with what you want to do, they beg you for it. Another headline from Think Progress, House Democrat Fundraising Committee to attack the patriotism of GOP members over the 4th of July weekend. And that reminds me, as we were already just mentioning, thinkprogress.org, a lot of the stuff that they do is good work. A big majority of the stuff that they do is the stupid, bickering between the phony left-right parties. They play into the whole scheme of it. But let's get dirtier. TheHill.com. Obama issues signing statement on the $106 billion war bill. Do you remember that? The one Kucinich spoke out against? And wondered, here we are, new president. Nothing's changing. Same war. Still funding it. President Obama signed the $106 billion war spending bill into law last Friday, but not without taking a page from his predecessor and ignoring a few elements in the legislation. Obama included a 5-paragraph signing statement with the bill, including a final paragraph that outlined his objections to at least 4 areas of the bill. Bush, if you'll recall, was heavily criticized for his use of signing statements, declaring he'd ignore some elements of legislation by invoking presidential prerogative. The Obama administration announced in the statement it would disregard provisions of the legislation that, among other things, would compel the Obama administration to pressure the World Bank to strengthen labor and environmental standards and require the Treasury Department to report to Congress on the activities of the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund. So basically, his signing statement said, don't pressure them to do anything in third world countries other than what we're already doing, which is, again, eugenics ops on many levels. And it also says, don't worry about any accounting from the World Bank and the IMF. There are links in there to flesh it out from justgetthere.us, as well as a press release from the White House and newsjunkiepost.com on the war bill, the signing statements, and all of it. Another one from AmericanChronicle.com, the Emperor's 7 signing statements. So yeah, we got 7 so far from the new change agent. But here's another clip, and this is what originally wrapped up this posting of Obamasiah updates, but of course there are always more and more updates, and they'll come right after this. Even more reporters, if you can call Jon Stewart a reporter, and he is, but here is the grand old lady, Helen Thomas, hitting the White House on their utter lack of transparency.
At today's town hall meeting, questions coming in on YouTube and Twitter and such. Who decides what questions will be asked?
I think a group over at New Media is shuffling through questions. I think if you go on, I did not do this today, but I think if you go on our website, you'll see some of those questions. And I think, Chip, at the end of the day, when you, I think the questions that will be read to the president. Obviously, he'll take some questions from the audience there. I think it will be a representative sample of the issues in this debate that we're dealing with.
And the audience is all pre-selected, right?
No, we usually just generally hand out tickets on a first-come, first-served basis.
I think in this case, it was the people were invited either by the White House or by the university. I mean, by the community college, as explained.
If the university is
just very tightly controlled, it feels, I mean, the concept of a town hall, I think, is to have an open public forum, and this sounds like a very tightly controlled audience and list of questions. Why do it that way?
How about we do this? How about you can ask me that question tomorrow based on what questions were asked, rather than pre-selecting your question based on something that may or may not come through.
Why pre-select? Why not just open it up to people and allow any question come in?
Well, Chip, I think if you get on your computer from your email address, have you sent in your question?
I think that would be inappropriate. This was for the public.
I'm sorry, I'm confused. Are you not a member of the public?
Well, I think if you were going to allow questions from the press, you have us in a prominent position over there and allow us to ask questions. You haven't done that.
Let's not get into the notion of where you'd be sitting if we asked you, if I let you ask a question. But
well out of shouting range.
Well, but you could email.
Would you put my question in there? Well, I don't think so.
Maybe. Have you emailed?
I mean, this is a full town hall.
If you have an email.
This is an open forum for the public to ask questions, but it's not really open. But it's not open.
Based on what?
Based on the information that your staff gave us on how the audience and the questions are being selected.
The questions are being selected by people that email on Facebook and Twitter.
Well, they're not deciding what questions actually get in.
Chip, I appreciate, again,
tightly controlled.
I appreciate, again,
unlike his town meetings all through the campaign.
I appreciate the pre-selected question on your part.
Well, dissenting views.
Yes, how about that?
I think that's a very safe bet. But again, let's, how about we do this? I promise. We will interrupt the AP tradition of asking the first question. I'll let you ask me a question tomorrow as to whether you thought the questions at the town hall meeting that the president conducted at Annandale. I'll let you amend her question.
I'm amazed at you people who call for openness and transparency.
Haven't even heard the questions.
It doesn't matter. It's the process. Even if it's a tough question, it's a question coming from somebody who was invited or who has screened, or the question was screened.
Chip, let's have this discussion at the conclusion of the town hall meeting. How about that?
It's a pattern.
Which question did you get to at the town hall meeting, Helen?
It isn't
a pattern.
It's a pattern of controlling the press.
How so? Is there any evidence currently going on that I'm controlling the press?
No.
Poorly, I might add.
Your formal engagements are prepackaged.
How so?
Well, and controlling
how
the
so?
Public.
How so? By calling that's reporters the night before to tell them they're going to be called up? That is shocking.
We've had this discussion ad nauseum.
Of course you would, because you don't have any answers.
Because I didn't know you were going to ask a question, Helen.
They're going to be so glad when they finally are able to get rid of Helen Thomas. But that's amazing performance from Robert Gibbs. The squirming, the obfuscation, the lies, and even all the little nervous giggles and laughter. You're so silly asking about how we're fixing everything. So whether it's Bush staging a question with Jeff Gannon or Obama staging a question with the Huffington Post via Twitter or YouTube or whatever, it's still a fixed question. And again, all of Robert Gibbs's dancing can't evade that fundamental issue. Couple more Obama Psy updates. Secrecy, transparency, detention, and depop. We've got Obamageddon 2012, Gerald Celente on the coming collapse. Press release from Gerald Celente's Trends Research Institute that notes that Empire America is on the verge of collapse. Its social, economic, and political systems are failed and failing. The measures taken by successive governments to save the politically corrupt, morally bankrupt, physically decrepit giant from collapse have served only to hasten its demise. While the decline has been decades in the making, the acceleration of ruinous policies under the current administration is leading the United States and much of the world to the point of no return. We close off this posting with another clip that we're not going to play of Press Secretary Robert Gibbs, and it's always interesting to see how long the press secretaries can hang on. You can only lie and absorb so much shit before you're completely absorbed and they got to pull you out. Gibbs says that no White House officials accepted any invitation to salons. Press Secretary Robert Gibbs told New York Times' Jeff Zeleny that no one at the White House had accepted invitations to the Washington Post's salons. What's this about? Let's break it down again from Washington's blog, The Fifth Reason the Mainstream Media Sucks. Washington's blog has previously listed four reasons that the mainstream media is worthless: self-censorship by journalists, censorship by editors and publishers, a predisposition to rallying around all war efforts, and censorship by the government. We now have to add a fifth to the list. Specifically, Politico.com reveals, quote, for $25,000 to $250,000, the Washington Post has offered lobbyists and association executives off-the-record, non-confrontational access to, quote, those powerful few. Obama administration officials, members of Congress, and at first even the paper's own reporters and editors. The offer, which essentially turns a news organization into a facilitator for private lobbyist official encounters, was a new sign of the lengths to which news organizations will go to find revenue at a time when most newspapers are struggling to survive. That may be one reason that the mainstream news commentators hate bloggers so much. The more people who get their news from blogs instead of mainstream news sources, the smaller their audience, and the less the mainstream media can charge for the kind of non-confrontational access, which leads to puff pieces for the big boys. There's more on that with the direct link to Politico and the aforementioned Washington's blog on Robert Gibbs dancing around the White House and the invitations to the Washington Post's little private meet and greets. I should take the moment right now to tell you that we are now into hour number two of the 130th episode of MediaMonarchy.com. It's the 4th of July weekend. It's July 3rd, 2009. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com, covering all the news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups in the hot little studio in southeast Portland, Oregon, the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, zeropointradio.com, revereradio.net, frolympia.org, boulderfreeradio.com, and cascadiapublicradio.com. A huge, huge, huge thanks to all those lists of affiliates who help get the message of MediaMonarchy.com out. And I'll remind you, I've always got Instant Messenger signed in. Media Monarchy is the name. There's also the chat room over on zeropointradio.com. But let's plunge forward into the latest on the coming BioWars and all the swine flu updates, lab leaks, mutations, and mandates. Again, the question. And I thought this was a crazy conspiracy theory we put away and we're done with. But here we have the independent.co.uk asking the question yet again, did a leak from a lab cause swine flu pandemic? It swept across the world, killing at least 300 people and infecting thousands more. Yet the swine flu pandemic might not have happened had it not been for the accidental release of the same strain of influenza virus from a research laboratory in the 1970s. This according to a new study. Scientists investigating the genetic makeup of flu viruses have concluded there is a high probability that the H1N1 strain of influenza A behind the current pandemic might never have been reintroduced into the human population were it not for an accidental leak from a laboratory working on the same strain in 1977. Two medical researchers believed that this strain of the virus had been extinct in the human population for more than 20 years until it was unwittingly reintroduced by scientists working in a research lab somewhere in the world, leading to a pandemic in 1977 that began in Russia and China. Quote, careful study of the genetic origin of the 1977 virus showed that it was closely related to a 1950 strain, but dissimilar to influenza A H1N1 strains from both 1947 and 1957. This finding suggested that the 1977 outbreak strain had been preserved since 1950. The reemergence was probably an accidental release from a laboratory source. End quote from this study published in the New England Journal of Medicine. That's no small potatoes. And the rest is a list of headlines on the BioWars and swine flu updates. Voluminous research proves vaccines are deadly. This is from Infowars.com, and this is definitely one to bookmark and make a PDF of and make a permanent link to. Voluminous research proves vaccines are deadly, where they note at the top that a reader sent the list of references proving vaccines are deadly. The next time somebody calls you a conspiracy nut for warning about vaccines, print this list out and give it to them. It is massive. There are dozens and dozens, and I'm scrolling, still scrolling over the list of research, all peer-reviewed, all in journals, all published, all proving that vaccines are deadly. Swine flu spreading at two Florida prisons. That's from the Miami Herald. 9-year-old girl reported to be the latest U.S. swine flu death. That's from Wikinews. 500,000 New Yorkers may have the swine flu. That's from the New York Post. From Scoop out of New Zealand, scoop.co.nz, they have swine flu update number 90. If that gives you any impression of how quickly this is growing and what we probably are facing this fall. And what might that be? Well, let's hit the next headline from Press TV. Mutant swine flu virus weathers medication. Danish scientists have traced a new strain of H1N1 influenza, which has shown resistance to the foremost swine flu medication. You know it best as Tamiflu. In a Monday statement issued by Denmark's State Serum Institute, researchers at the center maintained that they anticipated resistance from the virulent virus due to its high mutability powers. Statement goes on to unwind worries about the newly discovered case, saying that the carrier of the new strain has almost recovered from the illness. Another from Danger Room, where the Pentagon says we need to stop those bio threats before they spread. And the last bit, we hit it before, but we'll hit it again. The Arkansas State Health Department has said that mandatory vaccines are constitutional. There's even a long telephone conversation recorded by someone calling up the Arkansas Health Department, and where they point out many, many times. We can line you up and shoot you up anytime we say there's a national emergency. But now some good news. What the late, great Bill Hicks would call a positive drug story. Rope, not dope. Oregon legalizes hemp cultivation. From Raw Story, Oregon's House of Representatives voted Monday night to legalize the cultivation of hemp, becoming the sixth state to do so just this year. Oregon Senate voted 27-22 in favor of the new law last week. Monday's 46-11 House vote means that the measure will become law, barring an unlikely veto by Governor Ted Kulongoski. The move is part of a rapidly growing nationwide trend to liberalize laws relating to marijuana. Hemp is a botanical cousin of marijuana, traditionally used to make clothing, rope, and other durable fiber goods. Hemp is a versatile, environmentally friendly crop that has not been grown in the U.S. for over 50 years because of a misguided and politicized interpretation of the nation's drug laws by the Drug Enforcement Administration. That's a quote from a statement by VoteHemp.org President Eric Steenstra. While a new bill in Congress, H.R. 1866, is a welcome step, the hemp industry is hopeful that President Obama's administration will recognize hemp's myriad benefits to farmers, businesses, and the environment. And that's why they don't want it to happen. I believe H.R. 1866 is probably the work, again, of Barney Frank and Ron Paul, the Industrial Hemp Farming Act. And anytime we just even broach this topic, it just makes me blow my top about the idiocy of not using hemp for fuel, for paper, for fabrics, for food. You grow it, you harvest it, and another crop grows 6 months later. According to Vote Hemp, this year, Maine, Montana, New Mexico, North Dakota, and Vermont all passed resolutions or memorials urging Congress to allow states to regulate hemp farming. California is at the forefront of the marijuana debate, with a movement growing to decriminalize marijuana for personal use in the state by 2010. But in Oregon's debate, politicians were careful to distinguish between hemp and weed, and to highlight that fact that this new law would allow farmers to cultivate hemp, not grow marijuana. Some members of Oregon's legislature displayed t-shirts reading, "Senate Bill 676 is about rope, not dope." Links in there to more from The Oregonian, from Daily Kos, from VoteHemp.org, and their PR Newswire release. And we'll finish this off with a great comment, and I'm very thankful of it, from Nate, N8, where he says, "Finally, have to crawl before we walk. Once people realize this amazing plant's industrial potential, maybe they'll be more receptive to the incredible, safer, medicinal, recreational, spiritual wonders of its more psychoactive counterpart. Keep up the great work, James. Been downloading all the past episodes. This is the show I've been looking for. Thanks." And I say thank you, Nate. This is the show I've been looking for, too, and that's why I do it, because I love it, and I like to rattle cages and get the word out and do it in a well-produced and entertaining way. because, again, things are so ridiculously bad looking that we kind of have to shrug our shoulders and take some of it with a grain of salt and, again, dance our way into Armageddon. That doesn't mean lay there, let it happen. But I can't be holed up in a bunker. Continuing on, as it all spills out, and as the weeks have gone by, and as things have gotten crazier, and as the tendency to become completely obsessed with posting on MediaMonarchy.com, I can't have it all. I can't cover it all. There's no way. There's other sites that are bigger and better of covering it all than I can hope to do, but I've basically tried to organize a lot of the stories into a handful of subheadings, so that's why over the last several weeks and months you've heard me refer more and more to things like geopolitics, murder and mayhem, cyberspace war, Obamasiah, police state international, and now more on the Econo crash. Saks savings and severed services. Another great clip, and I didn't know that he even actually did his own little broadcast. Max Kaiser TV. It's up on YouTube. The show is called On the Edge, and in this clip, the great inflammatory Max Kaiser, closet 9/11 truther, points out that Goldman Sachs' crash of the markets last year was a false flag operation.
You're on the edge with me, Max Kaiser. You know, for the past few weeks, we've been talking about the banks on Wall Street and the global financial system, and basically the biggest financial heist that the world has ever known. The principal architect of this enormous heist is none other than the notorious Goldman Sachs, a 140-year-old institution on Wall Street that just reported record bonuses are expected this year. Record bonuses are expected at Goldman Sachs this year. How is that possible, given the so-called crisis that we were led to believe existed at the end of last year from the U.S. Treasury Secretary, who, oh, that's right, he was the former CEO of Goldman Sachs. Now, let's look at the smoking gun. I've got some video from last year. This is Henry Paulson talking to, I guess it's Congress or the press, trying to explain himself. And notice that, basically, he is lying. He's lying in a way that in any society that we can think of that respects truth would be considered tyrannical. This is absolutely outrageous. Henry Paulson lying through his teeth. Let's just take a little listen to this.
We repeatedly made the point that we were not doing anything for the banks just to help the banks. This was about the American people, and it was about credit and credit availability.
That's a big lie. He was doing it purely for Goldman Sachs' benefit, the bank's benefit, and not the American people's benefit. The $700 billion TARP money that was given to Goldman Sachs, basically as part of an extortion scheme from Hank Paulson, we now know at this time that money, almost dollar for dollar, is going to go directly into the pockets of the Goldman Sachs bankers. They simply took the money from the American people, passed it through Congress and Goldman, and into their pocket. That's all that's happened. It's pure larceny.
The economy was turning down.
The economy was turning down because Goldman turned off the credit spigots themselves. Money supply crashed, and the economy crashed as a result. This was a controlled demolition that was sponsored by Goldman Sachs to get the Congress to cough up hundreds of billions to pay themselves billions and billions in bonus money.
Partly as a result of what was going on in the credit markets. And so we then got the authorities, and the American people see the economy continuing to turn down and the situation worsen.
This is a false flag operation. The American people were scared out of their wits due to the financially engineered financial collapse by Goldman in the banking system to get the Congress and the American people to give them a lot of money to cover a lot of bad bets that they made in the mortgage market. You remember long-term capital management back in the late 90s? They made a huge error betting against the ruble in Russia. They got the Federal Reserve Bank in Washington to bail them out with U.S. taxpayer money. That's all that's going on here. They make a bet, they lose, the U.S. taxpayer pays it off. They win, they keep the profit. It's outrageous, but So far, the Obama administration is doing nothing to stop it.
And they will continue to do nothing to stop it. And he points it out quite well there that if they make a big bet and they lose, the taxpayers pick up the bill. But if they make money off of it, yeah, they keep it. Max Keiser is probably one of the best at using what is basically terminology from 9/11 Truth, talking about false flag operations and controlled demolitions, using the same terminology to basically explain what's going on with the new financial world order. Quite correctly, I believe. Now, before I put up more updates late last night, it was just going to be this first list of last FDIC Friday, where U.S. regulators closed five banks. Interestingly enough, we get this report from Press TV out of Iran. U.S. regulators closed five banks, bringing the total of U.S. bank failures to 45 this year as falling home prices take their toll on financial institutions. The Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, FDIC, said the five banks, which were closed last Friday, were the Community Bank of West Georgia and the Neighborhood Community Bank in the state of Georgia, Horizon Bank of Pine City, Minnesota, Metro Pacific Bank of Irvine, California, and Murray Bank of Los Angeles. Despite the U.S. government's efforts to drive its economy out of the 18-month recession, bank failures have largely increased this year. There were 25 failures in all of 2008 and just three in 2007. And now, as of this posting, we're at 45, where they note that Seattle-based lender Washington Mutual was closed in September last year to become the biggest bank to fail in U.S. history. And I keep priming the pump for a hopeful, not-too-distant future interview with Frank Lordy of Revelations Media to cover the inside job controlled demolition of Washington Mutual involving the FDIC and J.P. Morgan Chase. Huffington Post asks a question, you know, by the way, where's the gold? As we wonder about a possible bank holiday coming this fall. They do it all the time. In the UK, we're not used to bank holidays here because the last time it happened, it was when FDR wanted to confiscate everyone's gold. And so the questions come about what's in Fort Knox. But if we jump to the BBC with further supplemental research and links to Bloomberg and Washington's blog, China argues to replace the US dollar. Again, from the BBC, China's central bank has reiterated its call for a new reserve currency to replace the U.S. dollar. The report from the People's Bank of China, PBOC, said a quote-unquote super sovereign currency. You can read that as one world currency, global currency. Oh no, that's just crazy conspiracy theory. China's central bank chief has loudly led calls for the dollar to be replaced during the financial crisis. The bank report called for more regulation of the countries that issue currencies that underpin the global financial system. An international monetary system dominated by a single sovereign currency has intensified the concentration of risk and the spread of the crisis, this Chinese central bank said. The dollar fell after that report was released. No surprise. More on that from Bloomberg. A quick note about Bernie Madoff from the Wall Street Journal. He got 150 years in the epic fraud. And again, we're supposed to pay attention to the big celebrity cases that ultimately amount to a hill of beans when compared to what's really going on. There's a new 30-minute documentary from the organization known as the National Inflation Association at inflation.us. They have a new 30-minute documentary, Hyperinflation Nation, starring Peter Schiff, Ron Paul, Jim Rogers, Tom Woods, Gerald Celente, and many others, preparing you before the U.S. dollar is completely worthless. Hyperinflation Nation.
Inflation, simply explained, is the printing of money. Inflation is the value of the money in your pocket
going down, while prices all around you rise. When gas prices rise, when your grocery bills go up, this is a symptom of inflation. The Federal Reserve is printing money out of thin air every day. If you have money in the bank, that money is decreasing in value. In other words, we should all be worried about inflation because it affects the prices of everything you use on a daily basis. There have been good men warning us for years about inflation. Jim Rogers, Peter Schiff, Mark Faber, Ron Paul, and many others. They have spoken about the uncontrollable spending that will lead to the total collapse of the United States. And then there have been those in power who have ignored the warnings. George W. Bush, Ben Bernanke, Timothy Geithner, Barack Obama, Nancy Pelosi, and all of Congress. We will show you how these individuals, through stimulus plans, bailouts, low interest rates, and the ever-expanding balance sheet of the Federal Reserve, will lead to the destruction of the U.S. currency.
That's basically the introduction to Hyperinflation Nation. That actually, for the most part, contains just lots of already previously available clips from all those noted historians and economists pointing out what's going down. Calling it before it happened, pointing it out as it was happening, saying they're doing the wrong thing as it begins to happen, and continue to do the very historically incorrect things. But here's the second one. You know, I don't do it very often. When I want my satire, I usually go to The Onion or Get Your War On or some of those places. But everybody loves The Daily Show. And, you know, the commentary about what that means for an informed public, we don't have time to have right here, because ultimately, if nobody's watching news, at least maybe they are watching The Daily Show, so at least they kind of know what's going on. It does have the after effect of basically turning it on to a big fucking joke, and it's no big deal, and ha ha ha, it's all so funny, both parties are controlled, and yeah, ha ha ha. John Stewart wants to know why the CIA is recruiting Wall Street bankers. We covered that last week, and I think we know why, but let's hear John Stewart suggest that maybe the CIA engineered the economic meltdown.
Meanwhile, if recent untimely deaths had you yearning for 70s and 80s nostalgia, buckle your seatbelts.
In Central America, the military in Honduras staged a coup today.
The military seizing power in Central America, you know what this means.
It's a coup!
Oh yeah, baby! Take you back to the 80s. President Zelaya of Honduras was a democratically elected left-leaning leader forced out by the military after trying to change the country's constitution to allow him to serve a second term, which I gotta say, by Central American strongman standards, not really coup-worthy.
He awoke to the sound of gunfire in his residence. He was still in his pajamas when the military forced him to leave the country.
Although, luckily for him, they were his military pajamas. You know, you gotta be prepared in Central America if the coups are coming back. You don't want to get carried off in the night like Noriega. Now that was embarrassing. And you can't see it in the picture, but the butt flap is open. He wasn't right. He was wearing Spider-Man pajamas. It's weird. Zelaya is currently in exile in Costa Rica. Which means, I guess, at some point he could decide to walk back. You know, I'm not sure how I feel about this. In the past 2 weeks, we've had the stirrings of a pro-democratic revolution in Iran and a military junta seizing control in Central America, and our CIA has seemingly had nothing to do with either. Or are they just that good?
The CIA apparently wants you. The spy agency has started advertising jobs to recruit investment bankers, top analysts, and hedge fund honchos.
Okay, apparently they're not that good. Why would the CIA want the investment guys? The CIA specializes in taking calm, stable countries and causing them to collapse. Why would they want people who ran...
has a fun angle to it.
Well, here we're talking about people who dabble in the world of stocks and bonds, but your idea, your move, brings to mind James Bond.
Bonds and bonds. Kill him. He knows too much. So they're going to be doing a lot of spy stuff there, huh?
We're bringing people in to do economic analysis on a range of topics. They go through a range of different training based on their amount of experience they've had doing written analysis.
Oh, written analysis. I think I saw that movie, The Spy Who Sat There. That's the worst spy job ever. What do I do? I'd tell you, but if I did, you would not have sex with me.
What about survival training? Well, I think the biggest survival training they're going to have to go through here is how to drive through the streets of Washington.
This is a bullshit job! I bet even their meetings with Q are going to be lame. All right, I'm going to give you this watch. Pay close attention, because if you're caught in a bind, it can also be used as a calculator. I'm going to give you this. It looks like a pen. You can write with it. Still, this all does raise one question. In its desperate race to stay one step ahead of the terrorists, the CIA wants the analysis of laid-off Wall Street workers. Where did the CIA ever get the notion that epic failure should be rewarded? Oh, right.
At which point they show a photo of George Bush awarding George Tenet, head of the CIA, for epic failure. Playing right back into the phony left-right politics of it all. From MSN's Money Central, asking the musical question, could your post office be closing? As mail volume declines, and I have to say, I sometimes wonder, it kind of just seems like there's only Netflix envelopes going around in the mail anymore. As mail volume declines, the U.S. Postal Service could shutter up to 3,200 post offices and retail outlets. Most people say they understand, unless it's their post office. A rallying cry can be heard across the country, from the swanky streets of New York Soho to the tiny town of Randolph, Kansas. Save our post office. As the United States Postal Service, weighed down by a crippling multi-billion dollar deficit, shrinks its operations, post offices across the country are on the chopping block. Each year, hundreds of postal operations shutter, but this coming fall could be the single biggest consolidation in history. Over the next 3 months, more than 3,200 post offices and retail outlets out of 34,000 will be reviewed for possible closure or consolidation. Another ugly list of headlines, again from Washington's blog, where we note that debasing a currency leads to financial collapse, just as it has for thousands of years. Market predictions from the Foundation for the Study of Cycles. More think tanks, white papers by white people, pointing out, putting it on the record, what we know and what we now see. MarketOracle.co.uk has Goldman Sachs as the fourth branch of the U.S. government, where we should note, as we had Max Keiser talking about Goldman Sachs just a few minutes ago, the amazing new article from Matt Taibbi in Amazingly Rolling Stone, which pretty much details how Goldman Sachs have had their hands in every boom and bust for the last 80-plus years. I believe that's right. Double check it. Don't take my word for it. Population increase in older U.S. cities. That's from the Washington Times. Again, getting us into herded, compact cities. As we see the military in Colorado pushing the ranchers off. Get off the land. Get into the control grid. More from Gerald Celente this time. A clip from Russia Today. Pointing out, of course, that the U.S., as we continue to print dollars into no value at all, just keep the printing presses running, Federal Reserve, not federal, no reserves, they loan us money at interest, even though Congress could take it back. Speaking of Colorado, Colorado mayor buys the Central City paper that, oh, they criticized him. So if you can't beat him, buy him up. Works for Windows, works for Starbucks, works for Walmart, works for... Two more notes on the crumbling California. Feds could seize California parks if closed by budget. That's from Breitbart. And again, again, more great work from Washington'sblog.com. An economy bigger than Russia, Brazil, Canada, India, or Spain is about to default. Like the Sloan song says, we're losing California. So, last Friday was FDIC Friday. We had those five banks close. But again, and we take the name FDIC Friday from Cryptogon.com. And this time, by way of CNN, it's FDIC Thursday. Probably because of the 4th of July holiday. Seven banks were shut down by authorities Thursday, pushing the tally of failed banks in 2009 to 52, more than doubling the failures in 2008. And we're only halfway there. Six regional banks in Illinois and one in Texas closed their doors, according to the FDIC. The rash of Illinois failures are interlinked. All six banks were controlled by one family and followed a similar business model that, quote, created concentrated exposure in each institution, according to the FDIC. What family might that be? Well, I'm not sure, but let's see. State regulators shuttered John Warner Bank, based in Clinton, Illinois, and named the FDIC the receiver. The State Bank of Lincoln, based in Lincoln, Illinois, will assume all the deposits of the failed bank. Later Thursday, state regulators closed First State Bank of Winchester, Illinois, and named the FDIC as the receiver. Rock River Bank, based in Oregon, Illinois, was shuttered by state regulators. The FDIC was named the receiver. Elizabeth State Bank in Elizabeth, Illinois, was closed down by state regulators and the Yeah, you get the idea. The First National Bank of Danville, headquartered in Danville, Illinois, was shut down by the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency, and the FDIC was named the receiver. State regulators shut down the Millennium State Bank of Texas, based in Dallas, and named the FDIC as the receiver. The biggest, the seventh, state regulators shut down Founders Bank, based in Worth, Illinois, and named the FDIC as the receiver. Which brings us to wondering how many more deposits they can insure. But we heard a little bit ago from Anton Chaitkin talking about Rahm and Ezekiel Emanuel's eugenics operations. We mentioned that Anton Chaitkin worked with Webster Tarpley. I'm not sure if they worked together actually on the amazing, groundbreaking, unauthorized biography of George Bush. Poppy Bush, that is. So let's hear from Webster Tarpley. Again, more fantastic work from RussiaToday.com. Webster Tarpley, journalist, radio host, and critic of the Obama administration, reveals to Russia Today who he really thinks rules the United States.
Is U.S. President Barack Obama a puppet with someone pulling his strings and controlling his moves? Webster Tarpley thinks so. The noted scholar, author, and radio host is here to talk to us about that today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
You have your own theory on how it is that the new U.S. president came into power. Could you explain it for us?
Well, to get right to the heart of the matter, if we look at recent U.S. presidents, we would have to conclude that Obama is the most controlled by Wall Street banking interests that we've seen in recent memory, maybe in the last 100 years. He may represent an all-time high in Wall Street banking and financier control over the U.S. presidency. We will find that about $13 trillion of Federal Reserve money and U.S. Treasury money have gone to Wall Street. Anything that's got to do with finance gets top priority. Compare that to the Detroit automakers. They have been driven into bankruptcy and are now being broken up. It's the dictatorship of finance capital. I would also say this goes back quite a ways. My finding in terms of Obama's biography is that he was probably recruited by people like Zbigniew Brzezinski and Samuel Huntington, when they were all at or near Columbia University in 1981 and 1982. So that Obama has been groomed over a long period of time.
Well, you say that he's been groomed for a long time. This has been coming. Why did they choose Barack Obama as a candidate? Did they know this was going
to
work?
I think the idea is to prevent others from seizing the presidency and to make sure that there was a pliable puppet in the White House at this point to do precisely what the financiers wanted and not be pulled in other directions by all of those other interest groups. I would say over a period of time, people like Brzezinski, David Rockefeller, the Trilateral Commission, and these are all simply organizations of Wall Street bankers under different names, they groom politicians so that when a crisis arrives, they have a number of politicians ready to go that they can put into action. And Obama's one of these. In other words, it's not like they chose Obama 25 years ago to be president, but he was part of a larger group among whom they thought that they might eventually choose a president.
That's exactly what I wanted to ask is the public during a campaign, they vote for their president. And they came out in hordes and voted for Barack Obama. But they don't have any say when it comes to choosing the president's advisors, his political cabinet. What do you think that means for democracy?
I think democracy right now is in a grave crisis. Let me just also point out, Obama did not get a landslide at all. He got 52% of the vote. He's largely a beneficiary of the hatred of George Bush the Younger, which in many ways is understandable. But it doesn't mean that there's a great popular mandate for Obama to do anything. The problem is now the cynical manipulation, and it starts, of course, with the U.S. media. People wondered, why did the media hate Hillary Clinton, and why did they choose Obama? And I think the main explanation is all of those media are owned by Wall Street. And Obama is simply the unity candidate of the entire financier elite of the top U.S. money center banks.
That's just a bit of Webster Tarpley speaking to Russia Today. Webster Tarpley, of course, noted historian and author, researcher, radio host of World Crisis Radio, author of the book's unauthorized biography of George Bush, Surviving the Cataclysm, Obama, the unauthorized biography, and the postmodern coup. All this now brings us to the last big story on the 130th episode of MediaMonarchy.com. It's July 3rd, 2009. It's the 4th of July weekend. America. Fuck yeah. Another bill Congress didn't read, or the coming climate tyranny. The House passed a 1,200-page climate bill Congress wasn't able to read all of. This by way of truthnews.us. This is actually written by Aaron Dykes of JonesReport.com. Despite heated objections by some Republicrats, the unread 1,200-page Waxman-Markey climate bill was passed 219 to 212 in the House last Friday. Final roll call votes can be listed and read at this link. Click it. House.gov. Objecting to the fact that 300 pages were added to the bill at 3 a.m., Minority Leader John Bonner attempted a brief filibuster, giving time for colleagues and aides to scan the unread extra passages and present certain excerpts for the floor. Politico blasts Bonner's efforts, reporting, quote, "That wasn't good enough for House Minority Leader John Bonner, who delayed the roll call vote by reading page by page through a 300-page manager's amendment Democrats added at around 3 a.m. Friday. Bonner seemed to relish the hour-long stunt, picking out the bill's most obscure language and then pontificating about what it might or might not mean." There is a clip of Bonner doing that, but continuing. Shockingly, co-sponsor Henry Waxman objected to Bonner's reading the bill on the House floor and tried to prevent it on procedural grounds so that its contents would remain unknown and no one would shift support or delay the bill's passage. Passing laws in secret is not law at all. It's tyranny and it's shameful. Waxman also wondered if any historical records would be broken by Bonner reading part of the bill and queried whether the tactic was an attempt to try to get some people to leave on a close vote. Again, Politico reports that Representative Joe Barton of Texas raised questions about whether there was even a copy of the current version of the bill anywhere in the House chamber. Link, link, link. Remarkably, Ed Markey, it looks like Markey, M-A-R-K-E-Y, remarkably, Ed Markey, one of the bill's co-sponsors, arose to report that a copy was only available at the Speaker's desk or online, which Politico reports would require members to leave the floor to access. Representative Michelle Bachmann stated plainly that the bill was a choice between liberty and tyranny, claiming that the bill institutes, quote, control over nearly every aspect in the lives of the American people, and advocating for the supposedly different Forbes Amendment.
We know, Madam Speaker, that this national energy tax will cost the American people $2 trillion. We know that. We know this will result in a loss of 2.5 million jobs every year for the American people. We know that. We know this will result in a reduced standard of living for Americans. We know that. What is the point and what's the benefit? But what is worse than this is the fact that now, because of this underlying bill, the federal government will virtually have control over every aspect of lives for the American people. It is time to stand up and say, we get to choose. We choose liberty or we choose tyranny. It's one of the two. The underlying bill represents the tyranny and the intervention of the federal government. Mr. Forbes and represents liberty for the American people. It's our choice. What will we choose today? Will we choose liberty or will we choose tyranny? I choose Mr. Forbes' amendment. I
gentlemen,
yield
back. Time has expired.
Will we choose liberty or will we choose tyranny? There's so much to break down on that, and you know that we're nonpartisan here on MediaMonarchy.com. I'm no fan of the right-wing reactionaries like Boner and Bachmann, but it helps shed light on, again, the self-supporting structure of the two phony left-right parties. One party's in favor, one party's out of favor. When your party's out of favor, you can amazingly point out the tyrannical things going on by that other party. So that's why we see people like Michelle Bachmann and people we would never spend time on here on this show pointing out the realities of what's going down. But they can't see it when their own party's doing it when they're in power. So during the Bush administration, we had all the left Democrats and we had great work from people like Kucinich and otherwise speaking out against what was going on. Kucinich, I shouldn't even bring him up as an example because he's still trying to fight it to a degree. So whether or not I'm playing Kucinich or Bachmann doesn't mean I'm playing into one side or the other. But when people on the floor of Congress are talking about tyranny, again, I think it's kind of important. A couple headlines, again, on the coming climate tyranny. From the Washington Times, Obama says the climate bill is just the beginning, and gas2.org covers three ways the climate bill will change your life. And that would be, it would affect what type of car you can drive, smaller. It would affect how much you pay for energy, more. It would affect what type of job you have, green. The coming green brigades, the green agenda. We covered the first global revolution think tank paper from the Club of Rome, where they say we need to create a man-made threat where humanity is the threat. And we realized that we could do that through environmental catastrophes and global warming. I don't think it was recorded, or at least I haven't heard it if it is, but TheHill.com is reporting, and I think this was overheard, that the aforementioned Bonner called this climate bill a, quote, piece of shit. Bureaucrats will carry out mandatory home inspections under this new climate bill. The controversial climate bill will legislate home inspections by government regulators who will demand to audit every aspect of your property under the threat of substantial and repeated fines if their visits are denied or their demands are not satisfied. The climate legislation, of course, written in a manner that automatically assumes that global warming is taking place and that it's attributed to rising CO2 levels, despite the fact that this is a highly contentious question is being rejected by more and more scientists as time goes by. But we won't get into that right now. We're going to wrap all this up with a new article and covering the latest episode from CorbettReport.com, James Corbett, where he writes, and it was posted up and picked up by a lot of other great sites, InfoWars and many others, and a big hat tip to James for linking to another bill Congress didn't read by MediaMonarchy.com, The Coming Climate Tyranny. Banksters love cap and trade. The sweeping new bill, which just passed the House last Friday, the Clean Energy and Security Act of 2009, is ostensibly about climate change, but it's in fact a bill of staggering economic ramifications that's going to accelerate the takeover of the economy by the well-placed financiers who have already plundered the Treasury and the Fed of $12-plus trillion and counting. It was rushed through the House in the tradition of such nightmarish legislation as the Patriot Act and the bankster bailout of last October. Hundreds of pages were added to it at the last minute, and it was humanly impossible for anyone to have read it all before they voted on it. This is, of course, exactly what the Obama administration and all his cronies promised would never happen. And this all for good reason. Bills passed in this manner are always the result of fear and panic and inevitably results in legislation that would never be passed upon a sober second thought. So again, links in there to nowpublic.com, bloomberg.com, govtrack.us, and mediamonarchy.com. Banksters love cap and trade. You can learn so much more about this from episode 92 of Corbett Report, Environmentalism is Corporate Controlled. Congress passed the Clean Energy and Security Act, and the banksters are already set to start the next big bubble, the cap and trade scam. Their corporate media stooges now have the public whipped into a frenzy over man-made global warming, even as the Earth cools off. Doesn't feel like it. It's really hot right now. I'm sweating as I sit here in the studio. But is CO2 doing all that? Or is it the sun cycles? What's happening on Mars? Are things melting on Mars? Is your car doing that? Do we need CO2? Do plants need CO2? Do we exchange oxygen with them? Is CO2 a deadly poison gas? Episode 92, Environmentalism is Corporate Controlled, explores the environmentalism approved by the corporate bigwigs and how concerned citizens can steer the environmental movement back to the topics that matter. And that would be by avoiding things that are funded by the big foundations. And when you see, British Petroleum or Dutch Shell acting like they're green, you know what green they're talking about. When Al Gore is involved in setting up the carbon indulgences that he will profit from in the cap and trade scam, what green are they talking about? Let's take one last glance back at Google News. Again, as we kick off the big Independence Weekend, as we wonder whether North Korea is going to fire missiles towards Hawaii, if California is going to completely self-destruct, what's going to go down in Iran, what's going to go down with the coming G8, what's going to go down with the upcoming FEMA Northrop Grumman national level exercise drills coming up in the States in just a couple of weeks. Britain seeks clarification on trial threat to embassy staff in Iran. British Foreign Secretary David Miliband said on Friday that Britain is urgently seeking clarification from the Iranian authorities after a top Iranian cleric had said earlier in the day that two detained local staff of the ... Don't have time to follow all the ins and outs of the latest color revolution in Iran, brought to you by the CIA and George Soros funding. The revolution was Twitterized by tens of thousands of new registrants to Twitter with the same photo and the same messages. details released on attending Michael Jackson's Tuesday Memorial. They're going to do a big lottery so you can get some tickets. So that's going to be a big, huge, massive circus in more ways than one. But as we, of course, noted, the coup in Honduras, Obama's Fisher-Price, my first coup, which, of course, we've already documented that two of the main military guys were trained at Fort Benning, School of the Americas in Georgia, and they doing what they do. They run drugs, they overthrow democratically elected governments. As you always know, too, that it's left-leaning democratically elected governments. Those are the ones we overthrow because they're trying to industrialize and get to first world. And if we let them get to first world, well, then hell, then we're going to have to compete with them. So we got to make sure we overthrow their stable governments and put crazy religious zealots in charge. Now, whether that happens in Iran or United States, that's up for debate right now. Instability is what lets the war of terror go on, and so much of it, as we've seen, at least in the last 8 years, is all predicated on the official story of 9/11. So in addition to Obama's first coup, we also have the big Afghan surge. Marines push deeper into Taliban areas in Afghanistan. Still, this is all still built on the main fallacy and lies of the official 9/11 conspiracy theory that even the mainline left buys into. Well, it was the Afghanistan. Yeah, it was them that hit us on 9/11. That's the war we want. Let's go to do that war. Not a rejection of war in general. Ooh, no, we want this war. This would be the better war, the good war. Russia loosens clasps on NGOs ahead of Obama visit. The Kremlin eased some restrictions on Russian NGOs on Friday ahead of a visit by U.S. President Barack Obama in the first major move to strengthen civil society since Medvedev took office. So yes, lots of stages being set for God knows what. Well, we had the Brookings Institute with their white paper saying, oh, well, there might be a horrific provocation to invade Iran. Any number of fuses are all primed up and ready. We're just hoping none of them get lit. Let's close this episode as we do each and every episode of MediaMonarchy.com by running down the list of some of the creepy customers coming to MediaMonarchy.com in the past week. We had NORAD, U.S. Spacecom, and the J6 Directorate out of Colorado Springs, Colorado, Google, Ardent Century 2009. Starbucks out of Seattle hit me up from a reposted story of mine about Ardent Century up on someone's MySpace page, Crass Costanzi. The 754th Electronic Systems Group, HQ.AF.mil, out of Suitland, Maryland. They were reading about the Pentagon closing a controversial Intel unit. Headquarters, USAISC, Fort Huachuca, out of Arizona. They visit again and again and again. Again, the 754th Electronic Systems Group, this time out of Alexandria. They Googled Pentagon Historical True Murder Mysteries. Navistar International out of Warrenville, Illinois, Googled MATV Military Contract. The Freedom Forum out of D.C. Googled D.C. Metro Secret Operator Codes. And that's going to deal with the train derailment in D.C., of course, happening during military drills of trains being derailed. Med.Navy.mil, Bureau of Medicine and Surgery, Bethesda, Maryland. They Googled JFK Secrets, and that's because that's where they took JFK after the Secret Service stole him. Homeland Security out of Springfield, Virginia. They were reading about the upcoming national-level exercise and previous ones as well. The NYPD reading about protesters marching against NYPD brutality. The USDA Office of Operations out of D.C. Terrorists could enlist six-legged soldiers in bio attack. University of Maryland out of College Park Googled NIST Plutonium Grove. Nationwide Insurance out of Raleigh, North Carolina, reading about Ardent Century. Schlumberger International, again, armyheadquarters.mil. Wells Fargo out of New York hit me up from James Corbett's article, Banksters Love Cap and Trade. And finally, the World Bank Group Googled YouTube, former Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney, arrested by Israeli government 2009. And she was, and so are the other human rights workers, and they're being detained, I believe, as we still speak. And that's where we're going to have to leave it for this amazingly dense 130th episode of MediaMonarchy.com. It's July 3rd, 2009. Again, thanks to the Portland Radio Authority, ZeroPointRadio.com, the Revere Radio Network, Free Radio Olympia, Boulder Free Radio, and Cascadia Public Radio, all helping me remind you to get active or get radioactive. Take care.
Police would get him just the same.